Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting on location today. We're going to share a lot on the pomegranate in our health and nutrition segment. It's our food of the day, almost like a mini classroom on the air. I'll also talk about low levels of the omega-3 fatty acids and how they can be a cause of depression, and how rich, well-educated, well, they get more out of a Mediterranean diet than a poor person. How is that possible? I'll explain, and more on health and healing. My guest in the second part of our program is Dr. Lynn Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O. He's a board-certified physician in internal medicine, and he's going to share about light therapy. What's light therapy? It's been around a long time, but now they've really upped the quality of what they can do with it. It's a photobiomodulation. That's what it's known as, and it treats disease and illness. It's non-invasive, non-toxic, inexpensive, so you're going to get some brand new insights and information today. Also today, I'll be asking Lynn about the power of a plant-based diet when it comes to helping patients either prevent, ameliorate at some level, or reverse disease. And that will be a very interesting discussion. Whether the physician themselves are vegan is really secondary. If they are and they've helped themselves, great. But if they're not, or only partially so, but they advocate that diet to their patients, what has been their response? That's what I'm interested in. Also today, on other areas, I'll give you a little preview now of upcoming guests. In the next week, we'll be having the definitive Progressive Commentary Hour on the reemergence of Hillary Clinton. She now has a whole national movement to be a new born-again Christian evangelical preacher. And she is making her move with her pastor as her big cheerleader, opening doors. Okay, that's good. Look, if someone has a moment of realizing all the things they've done wrong, the missteps, and are going to stop that and go towards a more spiritual way of dealing with life, I support that. No cynicism involved. But what if there is no apology to the specifics of what she's done? The 500,000 children who died because of her and her husband's sanctions on Iraq, and her Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, who would also be Secretary to the Ambassador to the United Nations, saying it was worth it. Wow. That really takes some arrogance to say a 500,000 dead children are worth some political maneuvering. But what if it's not sincere? What if it's just another one of the endless string of Clinton's ways of regaining power? And this way, if she became born again, she could get in the Republican churches, and therefore, next time she runs, and she will run again, she'll be running with the support of a lot of those who were disappointed in Trump. So we're going to have someone who knows all of this, Charles Ortel. A whole hour on the Clinton Foundation, Bill and Hillary, and her efforts to renew herself to another voting group. Also, next week, I'm going to have a definitive look at Iran and deconstructing the mythologies from Washington and the mainstream media and Wall Street that consistently demonize the nation as the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world, while ignoring the enormous human rights abuses and state-sponsored terrorism of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and others. And how much of a threat does Iran really pose to the Middle East? I'm having an expert on Iran, who is Iranian and a scholar and a professor, who will take us on a tour of what's really involved with Iran. And from all that I can see from my own research, before I believe that someone poses a threat, and immediately the entire media lines up and starts demonizing it. I just want to see if it's true. If it is true, fine. But what if it's not? What if we've once again, as we were with Afghanistan and Iraq and Grenada and Haiti, where we engaged in regime change, what if boots on the ground is not because it's a rogue, you know, bad state? That'll be next week. So I'm bringing some real heavy hitters on next week to talk about these issues. Now, something that concerns me, and I'm sure many of you, so I'm going to devote a lot of time to it today, and then I'm going to ask for your feedback. The jerks among us. Now, I know that you have had jerks in your life. And what is a jerk? To get a better understanding of jerkism, we're going to take a look at Professor Eric Schwitzel-Gebel, professor of philosophy at University of California, Riverside, from Eon, on his concept. I will be including my own commentary that I've written, and then I'm going to ask you to give your input. Mine's going to be different in that I'm going to use very specific situations, real situations that have occurred in my life, when I have been there as an advocate for a freedom of speech and a different way of looking at disease or social issues. It won't be just theoretical or philosophical or ethereal. It'll be very grounded in pragmatism. So today, for the jerks amongst us, we're going to have a requiem. So let's begin, because we always start with health and healing. First is from the University of California, Davis, published in the peer-reviewed journal Science. They found that byproducts of the digestion of dietary fiber by good gut microbes, and these are the bacteria, help fuel the intestinal cells to maintain their health, turn off inflammation, help healing. Now think of the tens of millions of Americans who suffer from something in their digestive system. Diverticulitis, Crohn's, ileitises, all these different type of itises. Those are all inflammatory. So we know how to turn off inflammation. Glutamine can turn off inflammation, as can apple cider vinegar and lemon juice and ginger juice, cayenne. These are strong anti-inflammatories. But something as simple as the dietary fiber that you consume, if you're eating quality dietary fiber. Now, you think that's self-evident. Now, of course, we're eating fiber. We're getting 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. No, you're not. No study shows that. I study the literature. It shows just the opposite. We're getting very, very few, and a lot of teenagers are not even getting 1 serving. Oh, wrong there. It was Ronald Reagan who made ketchup a vegetable serving, so at least kids would get 1 serving, as if ketchup, which is about 30% sugar, would be good for us. It is not. So I'm talking about those people in this audience, which are probably the majority of the people, who make sure that you have at least 6 servings of vegetables and 6 servings of fruits per day. Now, you can have them in different ways. You can eat them, fine. In a salad, lightly steamed, fine. Juiced, even better, because you'll get more of it. Just remember this. Let's say that you've got an apple, and we know how important the apple skin is and the apple flesh. But the reality is the average person would not consume more than 1 apple a day. But if you juiced 4 apples, you get about 12 ounces of apple juice. 12 ounces is a small glass. So now you're getting the benefit of, with the exception of some of the polyphenols that you would lose from the pulp, but you don't throw that pulp away. You can go ahead and blend that pulp in a blender with any other material that's in there and throw in some other fruits, and now you got a separate smoothie. So you're getting 100%, plus you're getting the benefit of 4 apples instead of 1. 4 times the quercetin, 4 times the vitamin C. So that's how you get the good bacteria. The good bacteria, according to University of California, Davis, in your fiber then breaks down, quote, and here's what it says, Our research suggests that one of the best approaches to maintaining our gut health might be to feed the beneficial microbes in our intestines dietary fiber, their preferred choice of substance. That's according to Professor Molecular Microbiology and Immunology, University of California. So, more fiber, healthier gut, less disease, longer life. There's also a study at the University of California at Irvine, published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. I believe it was that same journal that published one of my articles on protein some years ago. In any case, they found a link between the biological clock and aging, and here's what it is. I'll quote this. Scientists studying how aging affects the biological clock's control of metabolism have discovered that a low-calorie diet, low-calorie diet, helps keep these energy-regulating processes humming and the body younger. Now, I've mentioned many times that the amount of calories we consume and from which sources can regulate things as like our heartbeat and circadian rhythms or the body's biological clocks, and that every organ in the body has its own biological clock. So the more that you do to speed up the aging of that clock, alcohol, meat, chicken, fish, dairy, processed carbohydrates, white rice, white flour, white sugar, caffeine, soft drinks, that all has no value whatsoever in the body. That's all negative to your ideal health. They're pro-inflammatory, they're highly acidic, and that causes dysregulation. Now, when you eat the healthy plant-based diet with the juices and clean, healthy water, whether it's reverse osmosis or natural spring water in glass and or filtered water or in juices, which is nature's own filter. And watermelon juice is one of nature's most perfect juices. I mean, you just don't get better than fresh, cold watermelon juice and spritz in there the juice of one or two lemons. Throw in some ice, blend it up, and that's a really quenches your thirst. But it also floods the body with different nutrients that you need. So all this slows down the aging process, and the number one thing that can slow down all of our aging, reduce your caloric intake. If I give you a big salad, I mean a big one, huge one, you couldn't finish it. 10 different vegetables in there, you have very little calories. If I give you a pancake with butter on it, maple syrup, or some maple type of junk syrup, you have three times more calories and none of the nutrition. On one, you have all the good nutrition and none of the calories. If I give you a steak, and if I've watched those, the ones I see advertised are frequently not porterhouse, they're not New York ribeye, they're certainly not shank steak or oxtail. Those are frequently filet mignon, highest amount of fat of any steak, almost 50%. And all you have to do is just do the math. Let's just say that we have, for our convenience sake, you get 8 ounces. All right, 8 ounces of fat. And you've got 8 ounces times 28. We'll round it off. It's not exactly that, but it's close. Now you're getting 224 grams of fat times 8. So in one steak, just the fat, you're getting 1,792 calories. That's just the fat. But we also have protein in there. So let's just say we have 8 ounces of protein. Then just in your head, it's very quick and easy to do. You get 224 grams of protein. Your body only needs about 50. So you've just gotten what? Well, if it's 100, that gives you 2-day supply. You're getting 4.5 day supply of protein in one item, in one meal, in one day. But then 4 grams of calories per, and that's 896 grams. So let's add this together. You're getting 896 grams from the protein of calories. You're getting 1,791 calories from fat. You're getting 1,791 calories. That's almost 2,000 calories. That's your entire day requirement in one item, in one meal. And that's what they're advertising. And of course, you see that and you think, oh, wow, I get that. And I get shrimp on top. And I get lobster on top of that. And all they're doing with these ads is just what is known as product differentiation. They're showing we're giving you more of the things you love. So come in today and we're going to give you that delicious steak. But no, we're not stopping there. If you come in right now, within the next hour, we'll also give you an entire platter of shrimp, battered in something gobbledygook. Doesn't matter. You don't care, do you? If you really don't care about what you eat, how in the world would you care about how it's made? And who in the kitchen's making it? If they got one finger up their nose and the other up their ass, why should you care? You're getting all you can eat. Yeah, and are you really that concerned? When you look in the mirror, do you really care about that fat on your butt, on your front, on your sides, around your neck? No. Just ask Al Gore. Al, buddy, a lot of good stuff you have to say. Get yourself into shape before you do another documentary. Man, it's one of those things you don't want to keep looking at the sides of a neck that are coming out like inner tubes. So now we're giving you this huge piece of meat, far more than what the body requires. We're giving you all the shrimp. Oh, don't ask where the shrimp came from. The shrimp came from China, and we love China. We love Chinese people. We love those little pits that they grow their tilapia in and all the pig feces they put in there. But why waste the pig feces? The Chinese waste nothing. It goes in there with the shrimp. So now you're making sure you're getting high nitrogen pig feces eating shrimp in either there or Thailand. Doesn't matter, either one. And they're coming to you all frozen. So when you open the bag and put it in there, you're not going to taste the feces, but it's in there. But don't worry about that. Again, if you really cared about anything, you care about the dribble coming off your chin when you're slurping all this stuff down. But we're going to make sure that you get a lot to slurp, because now we got the steak, we got the shrimp, but let's put on some cheese. Now, this cheese is coming from dairy cattle. It's been genetically engineered. And of course, that means that their udders are overly expanded. And as a person that used to milk cows and at the McConnell's farm that my father also was a part owner in, we spent our summers there going out milking cows. I saw it. And when a cow has got an infected udder, you put it back in the pasture, you put a cream on it, you heal it, you don't milk it. Well, you do. Of course you do, because it's commercial milking. No one's down there checking every teat, and they chemically spray the teats anyhow with some kind of antibiotic. Is that the same antibiotic if they put it in soap, gets in your body and destroys your immune system? Yes, but again, who cares? You're not going to care about what's on your hands, because when was the last time you washed your hands? And when was the last time? Well, there it is. There's the proof. Bend up your fingers, nails. Look at your fingernails. Now, you actually are unique. You don't have to ask them for a salad bar, because you've got lettuce, carrots, onions, and broccoli growing under your fingernails because of all the dirt that you forgot that was not important that you left on there. Real men don't clean their fingernails. Only little wimpy people do. That's all right, big guy. So you're a real big guy. Now, remember, when you're in bed with a parasite and you're acting and sucking your thumb in a fetal position, asking for mommy, remember, mommy's not there. Jesus. So anyhow, I should never get into these rants, should I? Extemporaneous thoughts coming out of this head. So now we got you the cheese, but the cheese is coming frequently from infected cows. Do they separate it out? I only want the milk from that one teat because I don't believe it's infected. No, you're getting not only the milk from that one, but 2,000 other cows. They're blending it all together. And when you've got infected teat, you've got leukocytes. Leukocytes, well, that's pus. So we're going to pop some pimples into that cheese. Now you got pimple popping pus cheese to go on top of that because you're still not motivated. So they say, now if you come within the next half hour, we're also going to give you all the French fries you can eat. And we know how good French fries are since we put about 18,000 grams of salt on them and make sure that you can taste them. And then we're also going to put on a bun. That bun, you don't want to know how old it is, and you don't want to know all the different chemicals in it, the BHA, the BHT, the bicarbonate. It's all in there. And it's brown and it's acrylamide, but you can't spell acrylamide, let alone know what it does. So Who cares? And then we got to put a sauce on there, and the sauce comes from Sloppy Joe's. You don't want to know why he's called Sloppy Joe. He drools a lot, and he spits tobacco. Maybe some of that, maybe, I'm optimistic, it didn't get into that sauce, but who knows? You're not going to recognize what you're eating anyhow, because they also want to put bacon on there. You know, that little nice pig that has more brains than your dog, and your dog has more brains than you. So I don't know why we're not barbecuing you and feeding it to the dogs. Dogs wouldn't eat you. That's how toxic you are. But that's another story. So now you got the pork that should have been left alone, and you got the eggs, because you got to have eggs. After all, it's another source of great protein, 7 grams in there, again, from caged birds that eat their own feces, end up with something called leucosis, and leucosis is a bird leukemia. What do you care about leukemia? There's so damn many toxic bugs in you right now that they're fighting over territory to see who's going to eat your brain. I forgot. They've already started on that. And your brain is a lot like Swiss cheese, which reminds me, we better put a slice of Swiss cheese on there. Throw on some mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise, some pickles, some radish. And of course, so you can excuse all this, a piece of iceberg lettuce. And you know how much nutrition that has. Now you're looking at it and you're thinking, now you got my attention. I'm coming. All for $5.95. I'm going to stay for a week. And then we'll make sure that you go out on a stretcher right to the morgue. Hope that answers your question. The link between dietary caloric intake and what we put in our mouth. Coriander is a potent weapon against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. This is according to the University of Beira Interior in Portugal. And here's what they found. The problem of antibiotic-resistant bacteria has been deemed a public health crisis, with the CDC and others saying that there's an invasion of MRSA, M-R-S-A. MRSA stands for methicillin-resistant S-R-S. And about 80,000 people are going to get it, and at least 10,000 to 25,000 dying from it every year. According to this Journal of Medical Microbiology, coriander has a really powerful impact upon it. The oil coriander, a common kitchen spice, is toxic to this harmful bacteria, but it's not toxic to the human body. In fact, they found that the oil of coriander was able to destroy 12 different disease types of bacteria, including E. coli and Salmonella and B. cereus and MRSA. Growth stopped them. So along with wild oregano oil and propolis and peppermint oil and olive leaf extract and pau de arco, now add oil of coriander in your natural medicine cabinet. That's the latest on health and healing. I'll save my pomegranate commentary, since I gave you a different one off the top of my head. And we're going to take a brief break and come back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Next week also, we're going to have a Conversations with Remarkable Minds person on. Why? Because we need a new vision of our culture and how it relates to the world and the environment and other species and others in order to survive the future. The old myths need to be broken apart and replaced with new stories. And most important, we need a biology of wonder, of love, of the spirituality, of the commons that goes beyond the human community. So Professor Andreas Weber is a passionate visionary, a renowned biologist, historian of culture, ethical philosopher, and environmentalist, who argues for a new kind of enlightenment, thinking that unites rather than divides us, So we'll be discussing what it means to feel alive again, alive with passion and eros, unless you're Democrats, in which case you never think of the word eros. In fact, it's probably not in your vocabulary, because that would mean you would have to laugh. Maybe you'll look in the mirror and laugh at yourself. And that's probably the best birth control there is on earth. Being a liberal corporate Democrat, everything has to be then by Immaculate Conception, which is a contradiction in terms. So we're going to talk about all this. We're going to have fun with it. And you haven't heard him before, but I like to bring some of the most remarkable minds in the world on for you. And so he'll be on next week. Now, I want to take a little time to talk about jerks. Why? I'll begin with this concept. The first time that I was able to prove in a laboratory, under very specific conditions, that you could extend the lifespan of rats by almost 30% by fasting them. And instead of giving them tap water, give them filtered water or mineral water. I would buy giant 5-gallon containers of spring water. And instead of rat chow, to give them healthy food, real food, nothing processed, nothing out of a can. And I took my findings down after a year and a half, and at our monthly meeting, a group of 16 departments, all very orthodox, looking for chemotherapy. You know, it was a very, I was the only non-orthodox person in this place. But I had to play by their rules in some regards. You had to submit. I could never submit for peer review. It had to be approved first by them. And out of 137 different experiments I did with great conclusions, only two were ever allowed to go out. There was just enormous bias and prejudice. So I just share it with my radio audience or write an article on it. And they summarily dismissed the findings. And when I asked why this was done by specific protocol, there were people who observed the study. Nothing was faked. Here's all the procedures. Anybody could come in any time, day or night, and watch me do my work. These jerks had the idea that since it had not been done before, it wasn't being done now. Like, don't be so, you know, original. Do you really think that this is the first time someone would have done this? You here? That's just stupid. Okay, that's what they thought. And I said, well, all discoveries or changing the direction of a previous discovery happens when someone comes to some different finding that can be replicated by others using the same protocol. So would you all replicate my work? They all said no, but one person did. The director of the institute said, look, this is a junior scientist. Let's give him the benefit of a doubt. We'll set aside a limited number, 100 animals. We'll duplicate his findings using the same material downstairs in a different lab just to see. Well, a year and a half later, my results were duplicated and came to the same outcome, that caloric restriction, restricting your calories, which Americans refuse to do, giving them living foods, lots of raw foods and juices that I would make every day, and I would add on to this to where I could almost double the lifespan of a creature by the supplements and homeopathics I would give, but that time I wasn't using vitamins, I was just using foods and juices, that's all. And they came to the decision that, yes, I had duplicated it, but it really wasn't that important. They were studying ways of saving human lives with new drugs or eliminating pain with new pain relievers. So even though I had proved it, even though I had proved it twice, these jerks decided it wasn't important. So it was never submitted for peer review publication. Hence, the rest of the world that could have benefited from this, if they chose, didn't. So that was my first exposure to real jerks, that in the face of evidence that overwhelmingly supports a new hypothesis, a new direction, a new understanding of a condition, you refuse to even consider it because you don't want to be bothered with it, you feel it's not important, or in some way, you don't want someone to get some credit for something when you yourself have not done what you're supposed to do and be the next Einstein. So that was my first introduction to jerkism. But it didn't stop there. I was later, quietly, with the approval of the director of the Institute, and he only knew about this, and some other scientists, Dr. Lawrence Lachan and Hans Selye, the great father of stress psychology. I was doing psi research, meaning energy work, something that there was no textbook on, there was no scientific studies on, but my intuitive feeling that something was happening between a mother and her baby, between people that love each other, between people that shared common energies, the synchronicity of life, that we were simply not aware of a reality because we had not opened the code yet, but our limitation should not be the limitation of thought. And so I did studies, and the first study ever done in the world, this was published, by the way, but not because of the Institute. I just went ahead and said, the hell with you, and I published it myself. They would never read the journal anyhow. And I show that human beings, not all human beings, some human beings have the power. Rabbi Abraham Wiseman, Dr. Thomas Carruth, Dr. Morton Jacobs, a professor and head of the Department of Nursing at New York University Nursing Center, Dr. Dolores Perry. I'll think of her name in a moment. And also Olga Worrell and Harry Edwards in England. They all were able, out of 50 people, to create a healing, a spontaneous healing, 6 out of 6 times over a 2-year period in mice that I had borrowed, that actually came from Sloan Kettering, though I won't go into that now. And that proved that an energy was transferred. Now, they each had a different belief of what was happening, that they were channel, and through them, this energy was coming. So my theory was simple. Energy cannot exist as a half-truth, meaning, let's take the laws of similars, homeopathy. So if to treat a burn that is swollen and red and inflamed, you would use a similar. So what would create the condition in a healthy person? Poison ivy. If you rub your hand against poison ivy, it'll burn, blister, and get red and inflamed. You would use a diluted 30, 40, 60,000 dilution, so there's nothing there. There's no molecule, the original substance there. But you take that homeopathic solution, and it helps heal poison ivy. Dr. Dolores Krieger was the head of nursing. And from that, Therapeutic Touch was founded. And now Therapeutic Touch is an accredited course in every nursing school in the United States, all coming from that experiment. Now, so here we have the laws of similars. So the idea was that nature would never have allowed a half-truth. And therefore, if these people were able to cure cancer, then others could do it, but nature could do it. And so I did a 4-year experiment, which is the basis of how I can help people today and the diet advice I give today, where I was able to measure food based upon a unique energy, not through a calorimeter measuring calories, but rather from vital life energy. I did not have this equipment. This equipment was provided quietly by Dr. Douglas Steen down in Philadelphia. What is it? Drexel University? Drexel University. And two other scientists came in, and they supplied equipment that was on loan from the Navy. And very quietly, we were able to measure the value of foods. And the highest value of foods that had the highest healing energy were the raw, organic, living foods. But the moment you started to transform that food, if you took an apple and made apple juice, it was still a 10. Eating the apple was 10, the juice was a 10, but because the juice is more concentrated and more quickly digested, it was a 10 plus. But when you dried the apple, it went down to a 9. In the same way, rice was lower until you cooked it. The cooking of the rice, the steam and water allowing hydrolysis and the softening of the outside shell allowed the endosperm and the internal ingredients to be made available. Hence, you actually increased the nutritional value, the healing value from beans and seed if you were able to either germinate them to get that nutrition forward. Tomatoes, for example, many studies now on tomatoes. Tomato sauce has more nutritional value, more lycopene, than eating a raw tomato because it's more bioavailable. The light heat has changed the chemistry to allow it to be absorbed at a greater level and made available to your cells. So all those years I was doing that scientific research, I was using it in my practice and seeing the difference and using it on patients across the street. I was able to because as a registered dietitian and a clinical nutritionist and a PhD in human nutrition and public health science and also on the board, I went down and took some patients and had remarkable results with very serious illnesses, mainly cancer. That's what they specialized in. But also, interesting enough, was able to save the life of the director of the institute, who was dying. He was out. Nothing they used could stop his infection. And everyone was called in for their final goodbyes. And when I went in there, I just said to him, I'm sorry, I'm not here to say goodbye. I just want to know, are you now finally open to allowing me to try something? Since you're going to, pass within the next minute or hour or day. He said, okay, all right. Shrugged his shoulders. So I went to work. And I had hoped he'd say yes. So I had a whole case filled with everything and immediately started the IVs. And we got everything going. Everybody thought this was just the stupidest thing they'd ever seen. What's he doing? And I just said to him, because I could hear him. They're a foot away. I can hear what you're saying, fellas. And look, you all said goodbye. You said he's dead. You said, this is it. So why don't you just go in the other room? And if it's it, no harm done. Well, I work with him right through the day and the night and the next day and the next night. And by the time I said, I'm going home, just keep following this protocol they did, he regained complete health, total health. And went on to have another 27 years of life. So you'd think that people would pay attention. Those are jerks. The people who watched what happened, well, it must have been a coincidence. He might have been that sick. Well, hold on. You're a professor of bacteriology. You're the one who said he had these massive infections. You're the one who gave him all these antibiotics, say it wasn't doing any good. You're the one doing the samples showing that he still had this. Are you now saying that you were wrong? You were in error? You should be sued for malpractice? The idea, a jerk can never acknowledge when someone else does something that they couldn't do themselves or no one else has done. Now, that's just in medicine. Now think of all the doctors giving 10 million women every day synthetic hormone replacement therapy to prevent hot flashes, osteoporosis, and reverse the probability of a stroke or heart attack, only to find out that it increases the risk of a heart attack, increases the risk of stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia by 13% minimally. That means every single year, American medicine is willing to sacrifice 1,300,000 women, their health, on the altar of medical jerkism. Because this is not hidden esoteric. You got to go 17 miles into the desert, dig a 300-foot hole. Then you will find a stone. Read the hieroglyphics on the stone. It'll tell you what to do, that it's dangerous to take this. This is in the peer-reviewed medical literature. I can find this in JAMA, the New England Journal of Medicine, PubMed. Just do synthetic hormone replacement therapy, harmful effects, and it's all there. So if I can find it, they should have been able to find it. These are not illiterate people. These are people fully capable of doing this, not to do that, knowing there's a better therapy and not using it, or knowing the therapy you're giving is dangerous and simply stop, and they choose to do neither. So that means that American doctors are facilitating the diseasing and death of American women. Well, what does that say about women doctors then abusing the women patient? Talk about a need for some introspection and reflection on what it means to be a doctor. Heal, first, do no harm, and secondly, the empathy that maybe your brain, as smart as you think you are, maybe you're not that little genius that you keep telling your daughter and son that they are, and then give them Ritalin, and then watch them commit suicide. I have no sensibility that can in any way modulate their jerkism. They're jerks as being doctors. They're jerks in their arrogance, their egos, their lack of concern for what really will heal. They're into proprietary profit-based medicine, even if they come with good intents. Show me the ones willing to stand out. 920,000 doctors today and under 3,000 are practicing complementary or alternative medicine, because one group are jerks and the others are not. You have a local station board. I'm not going to pick on any given Pacifica local station board. They're all equally guilty. They're the ones who are supposed to be bringing together people who know how to earn income from non-compromised sources, from foundations that have good quality backgrounds, and help the local stations bring in quality members and new members and grow the station and serve the communities that it's meant to serve. They bring in people who are specialists who might own an ad agency and say, now can you use your skills to help promote this station, these shows, all these wonderful shows we have. And they also bring in people who are fundraisers who specialize in raising funds, who can write checks themselves, deep pockets. Sure, I can write a check for $2 million. Okay, would you write it? That means we don't have to have another fundraiser for another 6 months. And we can use that money to hire people like a human rights person to get rid of all the people who shouldn't be here. Now, you might not be left with many people after that, but at least the people you do have won't be, you know, engaged in sexual harassment and racist epitating, you'll get some good quality people. Oh, and how about a developmental director? So we can really have quality premiums, not infomercials, based upon what a station's audience needs and should benefit from. And you'll have on a fulfillment director, make sure that when money's brought in, it goes to pay the fulfillment costs and are out within 28 days so that you're in compliance with FTC rules and laws. That's what a local station board member should be able to do. Now, if you can't do that, you shouldn't be there. When I go around the country, and I'm syndicated all over the place and have been for a long time, and I speak with someone who runs a local nonprofit station, they're doing great. Short fund drives. You only hear a program pitch something once. It's not played, you know, 15 more times till people are sick of it. And they have a good board, and it's the board that makes a difference. So it's real jerkism when the people who have qualities, you exclude them because, well, we don't want any professional, happy, positive, successful, wealthy, educated people on this board. We own this board, sucker. And we'll get in your face. We'll show you what mean, anarchistic, and self-righteous indignation is. Professionals need not apply because we do not consider them. That's jerkism. So then if that happens everywhere, then it's going to happen to your national level. So now you can't do anything. You can't grow. $224 million in assets, $7 million in debts, and you can't even pay salaries. That's jerkism at a big-time level. So you see there, the networks, you say you care about the truth. Yeah, you care about the truth? Then why don't you send your reporters to Libya and speak with the people who were there before Gaddafi was destroyed and their country was destroyed and ask them, what was Libya like then and what it's like now? Oh, you won't make that trip, but you'll trust someone from the Cato Institute or the Heritage Foundation or the Free Enterprise or the Council on Foreign Relations. That's the most septic damn institution in the world. And you trust them as your spokesperson? That's jerkism. You're all a bunch of jerks. And oh, yeah. And Wall Street, you pride yourself on how you can screw everyone that you can. Wall Street is nothing more than 173,000 men and women walking around with erections seeing who they can screw. There is no heart attacks ever in the history of Wall Street because they don't have a heart. And there's no brain hemorrhaging because they don't have a brain. These are the ultimate predatory genomes manufactured, manipulated, for a one-way predatory conversation. I make a commission when I get you to buy something. I make a commission when you sell it. Whether you lose or make money is irrelevant to me. I made mine. And I'm going to put my money in derivatives that are toxic. I'm going to put my money in credit default swaps. And I'm going to put my money in buying up small companies so there's a monopoly because there's no one who's a trust buster. And I'm going to put my money in making sure you little business person that really controls our economy, that you get no help. And you small homeowner, that you get no bailout. And you student, that you get no forgiveness on your loan and you're paying predatory interest. And you at home, you miss a car payment, we'll repossess your car, then we're going to charge you for the balance, and then when you can't pay it, we're going to have you arrested and go into a private prison system. And no one's saying, wow, Wall Street, you're nothing but low-life degenerate jerks. If all of Wall Street sunk in the river tomorrow, I'd be the first one down there saying, now look at America, you can exist without them. Now, of course, I give them life rafts because I don't believe in capital punishment. I don't believe in punishing a person except by showing what they are. So American pharmacies, you really care about your drugs healing people? Your drugs don't heal anything. And you're entirely exploitive. Energy, you care about our air and water? Not at all. Food, genetically engineered? Everywhere you look, all I see are jerks running a country, selling product to also jerks who don't care about what they're doing. Hey, fella, you care about global warming? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What causes global warming? I don't know. Well, eating that hamburger caused global warming. I'm not going to stop me eating. That plastic bag, it won't go away. It'll be here 100 years from now. Well, I'm not going to give up my bag. And that television you're watching, it's nothing but a propaganda tool. Well, I like my, you don't take my Qatarish and family away from me, or I'll just get out my shotgun and stick it in the wrong place and shoot you. So you need the Kardashian family to remind you of something that's wholesome and high quality? Well, okay, we got a lot of jerks. So let's pull back a moment. Picture the world through the eyes of the jerk. The line of people in the post office is a mass of unimportant fools to a jerk. It's a felt injustice that you must wait while they bumble with their request. The flight attendant who's not a potentially interesting person to you because you're a jerk, with her own cares and the cares and struggles of making sure everyone's safe and getting everything, you're just looking at it as, this is just a stupid person and she wants me to shut up on my cell phone, jerk. Custodians and secretaries are lazy complainers, you think, because you're a jerk and they don't suit your need. The person who disagrees with you at the staff meeting, well, they're an idiot. I got to shut them down. Why? Because you're a jerk. Entering a subway is an excuse in nudging past what you consider these dumb schmoes. We need a theory of jerks. We need such a theory because, first, it can help us achieve a calm, clinical understanding when confronting such a creature in the wild. Imagine the nature documentary voiceover. Here we see the jerk in his natural environment. Notice how he subtly adjusts his dominance display to the Italian restaurant situation. And oh, every situation, he must be right, they must be wrong. He must be perfect, they must be inferior. You see, the jerk is everywhere. And there are two types of jerks. There's the jerk designate as a kind of chump or an ignorant fool, though not a morally odious one. And then there's the jerk that goes out of their way just to show you how obnoxious, crude, rude, vulgar, in your face, screaming, yelling, insensitive to anyone else they can be. That's a lot of the jerks. A jerk is fool is also all around us. The President of the United States, all the presidents of the United States, jerks. Their cabinets, jerks. The technocrats working on behalf of them and themselves, jerks. The bureaucrats who don't ever question the quality of their work, jerks. The people who don't question the quality of their work, jerks. The people that don't question the quality of their diet, jerks. The people who don't care about their diet, jerks. The people who don't exercise and get overweight and then have heart disease and diabetes and then want to blame someone, jerks. So you see, we have a lot of jerks. The question is, are we personally jerks? Can we look at our own imperfections and identify them? Can we share a positive input with someone without denigration? Can we look at the fact that we're all imperfect and look at what is likely to change and what will never change? The person that refuses to change and is self-righteous in being a jerk, that's real jerkism. So you see, it doesn't make someone evil because they're a jerk. But what if we had people who were the opposite of jerk? Kindness people. People that go out of their way to be kind. People look for the best in a situation. People look for solutions everywhere. People are thoughtful. People who share and care, not just for themselves, but for you and for nature and for animals. People want clean water, clean air, clean food. People want animals to live as sentient beings without being slaughtered. People who look at those who are the least amongst us and try to help them whenever they can to feel better about themselves. So remember, in this world, we're either allowing ourselves or have degenerated into jerkism, or we are finding some viable redemption by looking for positive solutions without the need to always see everyone as the enemy and everyone as predatory. And it's interesting to watch in different environments how competitive, how pushy, how bitchy, how angry, how passive-aggressive so many people in entire professions, hoping someone makes a mistake, hoping someone gets fired so they can take their place. Where the person is coming from kindness doesn't want you to lose your job, wants to show you how to do it better, doesn't want you to lose your health, wants to encourage you to make healthier choices, and will be there in that process. We have a lot of wonderful people in this world, in this audience. And at least now, at least from my own personal subjective position, you see how when I look at the world, though I don't say it, I can think, well, there's a jerk. And that's why there's certain places I won't go, certain places I won't teach, certain work I won't do, because I know there will be no fertile outcome. If one day you see that every time you take brand new heirloom organic seeds and you go into a parking lot and you put it on the asphalt and you throw some water on it and you think there in the future will be a plant, and I'm thinking, no, it doesn't have the soil, doesn't have the milieu, doesn't have the context, doesn't have the composition. Now, kind-hearted person, use all the tools that we have been provided in common sense and reason and with our education to plant seeds that have a chance of germinating. With that, I'm now going to go over to our guest who is standing by. I'm going to invite him back because I see that we've run short on time. But I'm going to tell the stations I'm going to go past our normal 55 to the top of the hour so Dr. Lynn Saputo can have a chance to share some of his thoughts with us. Lynn, nice to have you with us. I gave your bio a little earlier in the program.
Thanks, Gary. It's good to be with you, too. I'm fascinated by what you were talking about. I mean, there's a whole attitude that we have about life that's a cultural flaw. There are fundamental flaws that cross every boundary of our culture, whether it be business, law, medicine, science, religion, sport. That's more just what you're saying. It's narcissistic and self-serving. And what we really need to do is evolve, not revolve. We don't need another revolution. I don't think trying to attack people is how we're going to solve the problem. You can't legislate these things. You have to inspire. And I know you're trying to inspire people to make the shift from where they are in their attitude about how they operate, from one of being narcissistic, one of sharing and giving and loving. That kind of evolution is what's going to change the world. And there are a lot of us trying to do that. And thank you so much for pointing out what you did. I couldn't help myself. I was listening to your conversation. It was wonderful.
Oh, that's fine. One of the wonderful things about having the audience that's listening right now is that they know that I'm always going to be honest and tell them what I feel. They can agree or disagree, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But at least if you stimulate people to look at a problem differently,
yeah.
What do we need to do to cooperate to make this solution happen? That's how you start off. You don't sit there and blame the problem. I never ask, you know, I never look at the symptom. This is where I have to start the journey of healing. You look at the progenitor, what caused it. That said, I'm going to give you the rest of this time. I'm going to bring you back to talk about light therapy because I want at least a half hour on that. Right. And you're an expert in that. I want you to talk about what you've seen when you've advocated a healthier plant-based diet for some of your patients and give us some feedback on examples, please.
Okay. I think the model of nutrition, pollution, and stress is one that the nutrition doctors look at, the orthomolecular doctors look at. It's what Linus Pauling is talking about. It's what you're talking about. And if you don't have the products to put in, the nutrition to put into your body, how in the world can you get the physiology to work like it should? And if you also complicate that with the toxic environment, which we have, and what you're all about as well with your shows, you've got a disaster that's trying to find solutions that will cure symptoms using drugs and surgeries and technologies rather than relying on lifestyle. And what you eat is huge. And you talked about the quality of food. I think it's absolutely essential. Now, in my life, in my world, I like the idea of a plant-based diet. And there's lots of data to support that when you consume a diet like that, particularly if it's raw, And if you can handle that and it's fresh and it hasn't been adulterated and processed or GMO'd or something else, we just left it simple the way that nature made it. We'd be consuming what we need to be able to harmonize our lives with nature the way it was created. So I am trying to eat a diet more that's based like that. And the awakening that I've had in the last decade about this embarrasses me about myself, because I think it's wrong, morally wrong, to be consuming animal products, you know, particularly when they're slaughtered in the ways that they are. When you can live in a harmonious way, eating things that are plant-based and be very, very healthy. And when you look at the literature that talks about all this, it's very clear that we live longer, we live a better quality of life, we're healthier. Why wouldn't you want to do that? So I promote that with my patients. I don't tell them what to do. And if some people want to use meat as a condiment, well, that's a step forward, but it's not the right total solution. We have to grow up and evolve into what I was talking about earlier, evolve into a kind of person that is aware that we live with sentient beings everywhere we turn. And we should be respectful of that and find ways to live in harmony and not pollute the world. I mean, we've got to stop. We're just like a culture in a bacterial culture in a petri dish. You know, this is a log phase of growth that is wonderful. Everything's going great. And then the next thing you know is you've polluted yourself and it dies. And we're doing the same thing. So do I think nutrition is important? It's huge. It's diet, exercise, stress reduction, getting enough sleep, weighing what you should, having a purpose in life that makes sense, that gives you fulfillment. That's medicine. That's wellness and prevention and the kinds of things that we need to be able to live and thrive. And we're not on that track. It's like we're eating one another. We're disrespectful of other forms of life. We don't participate in the things that we should to be able to make the world a better place. It's why we have all this political unrest. It's why we're waged in, I don't know how many wars are in now, 7 or 8 or 10 wars. I mean, it's crazy. So,
Lynn, one last question for you.
Sure.
There are over 900,000 physicians in the United States.
Yeah.
There are under 3,000 that call themselves complementary or holistic. And of those, you have about 1,000 who are board certified in their fields and have had or have academic positions. So these are people that are kind of the top of their class. The question is, why do you have under 0.5% of physicians in the United States who are advocates for healthy lifestyle?
Oh, that's easy, Gary.
Themselves. Why?
It's all about business. Who do you think runs education in medical centers? The pharmaceutical industry is funding a lot of that. And that's what that's all about. So it's about doing things. It's treating a set of symptoms with a bag of tools. It's not being with people. It's not looking at wellness. And the doctors are trained. And if they don't answer the questions that are asked in the way that they're asked and they expect an answer from, they fail. So you go in as somebody who really wants to help people to do the right thing. You're brainwashed for 10 or 15 years by the time you finish your training. And so you come out with the idea that it's drugs, surgeries, and technologies that are the answer to things. And it's not. And it's not just alternative medicine, not just complementary alternative medicine. It's about going to the deeper levels of why do people get sick? I mean, what's the psycho-spiritual reason why people don't thrive? And I wrote a book on that. It's called On Science, Spirituality, and Medicine, that helped me to understand how that works. And I now share with my parents. I'll send you a copy of it if you'd like to see it. It's just a short little 40-page book. These are the kinds of things that we don't get. We're into helping spend more money. We spend $3 trillion on healthcare. $3 trillion on healthcare. And the best countries in the world don't spend anywhere near that much. They're not even in the trillion-dollar area. They're in the billion-dollar area or less. And they're doing better because what we have is we now live in an economy. It's not a democracy. It's an economy. And it's how we spend the money that sustains the medical profession now. It's become a business, not a service. And you can't blame the poor doctors who've gone through their training. They come into it bushy-eyed and wagging their tails, and they can't wait to start helping people. And they start learning what they're supposed to do to manage all this illness-filled world that we live in. We have to stop that. We have to wake up. And it took me 25 years after I finished my training to wake up to that and say, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And it's not that I'm going to fight the pharmaceutical industry. I'm just not going to participate. And it doesn't mean I never use a drug. I'll occasionally use a drug. I may write 3 or 4 prescriptions in a week. Not like it used to be, where it was 3 or 4 prescriptions per person. So there's a whole conspiracy going on that's money-oriented, that's narcissistic, self-serving. It's these people you're talking about, these jerks, okay, from Wall Street. And are all over the place, and it's all over politics. And what do you think is happening in Congress? We don't have Congress people representing us anymore because we don't have a democracy. What we've got is a group of people who have been paid to vote a certain way. And we got corporations that are treated as individuals. I mean, I could go on with this for a long time. It's a sad scenario, Gary.
Well, I'm glad that you're out there. I'm glad that you're doing the good work because you are representing what a holistic and compassionate, and Hippocrates, also Socrates, philosopher would have, because you're looking at the person as a whole individual, not just the symptoms. Lynn Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O, will be back to discuss for about a half hour on an upcoming show this coming week, Light Therapy. He is one of the leaders in the United States doing research on this. In fact, he's doing some research right now under a National Institute of Health grant showing how light, natural, non-toxic, can help with different conditions. Lynn, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gary.
I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Wishing you all a wonderful weekend. Look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day, everyone.